Sorry. All right. I'm a professional. I'll stop.
There's the intro.
Yeah, there it is. You go.
This is Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon, bringing to you the best in news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen, and I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Coleman. Well, whenever you get into a hobby that involves any kind of enthusiast or collecting, there are trends that begin to appear. There's things like allocations, raffles, lotteries, fakes, and these things are becoming more common. And one of those hobbies that has quite a few parallels is sneakers. Matt Cusick is a certified whiskey enthusiast as a writer for Malt Review, but he's also the host of the Swoosh Life podcast that focuses, of course, on sneakerheads. He joins the show to give us an insight into how the shoe game and bourbon have so many similarities that, in Matt's words, sneakers are about 20 years ahead of bourbon. We dive into the types of collectors, brands, sales, allocations, and so much more. And if sneakers are really 20 years ahead of bourbon, who knows what the next few years has in store for us. With that, enjoy this week's episode. And now here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. This week's idea comes from Mark McCoy, who writes me on fredminnick.com. I love your Above the Char segment, he says. What do you think we'll see from the Buffalo Trace expansion? Will they concentrate on the brands that they are allocated, or are they going to make more Wheatley vodka or new releases? Well, I got to tell you, having had many conversations with them over the years, I feel like Buffalo Trace has been band-aiding the demand that they've had, because there's really not been another distillery that's received the amount of demand and gone into allocation and people standing in lines. No one's had as much as Buffalo Trace. And you can give me whatever story you want, but I'm just telling you, Buffalo Trace is inundated with people wanting their bourbon. And it doesn't matter if I like it, doesn't matter if Kenny likes it or Ryan likes it, or they get 100 bad reviews, people still want that bottle. They still want Blanton's, they want the Buffalo Trace Antique Collection, they want Weller, they want Pabbi Van Winkle. They just want everything that goes through that distillery. So I think they're going to probably go from a Band-Aid to like a full-on gauze strip to maybe a cast, I don't know, and then it's fully healed. But I think most of that expansion is going to be going right into the pipeline of managing their product load. But, you know, there's so many warehouses and stuff that they're building. It's insane. And good for them. You know, they've done a better job than anybody with creating demand for their whiskeys. So, Mark, if I had to bet on it, I would say that they're going to be trying to use that to basically bolster their inventory and their product line. Now, what they do with their marketing from there and their sales, hey, that's a whole different conversation. But I think they got to catch up with the demand first. And this, I guarantee you, Mark, as soon as they catch up with this crazy demand that they have, they're going to create a new market where there's new demand. So they'll probably have to expand some more. And that is the story of Buffalo Trace, more so than anybody else in bourbon. But great question, Mark. If you want to be like Mark McCoy, hit me up on fredminnick.com. That's fredminnick.com. Click the contact button. If I like the question, I'll read it on the air. Until next week, cheers.
And they're off for another Gift 270 2020 Unicorn Raffle. Your $20 ticket gives you not one, but two chances to win from our lineup of 20 Woodford Reserve treasures, including the grand prize, the rarest unicorn yet, the Woodford Reserve Kentucky Derby 150 Baccarat Edition. Only 150 bottles were made and is just like the one the Derby winning owner receives. Quit horsing around and get your $20 tickets now at give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 0002703.
It's that time of the year where everybody's starting to make their vacation plans on visiting Kentucky, the mecca of bourbon. And if you are coming to Kentucky, you need to make sure you visit us at Pursuit Spirits in Louisville. We're right in the heart of Clifton, near Butchertown and Nulu, and only just a few miles away from downtown Louisville. But when you do come, you need to book your experience to go do our whole shebang. This is the one that's really the star of the show. You get a full-on tasting. You get to do your own personal barrel selection experience. And you get to grab a whiskey thief and fill your bottle directly from the barrel. or do something completely brand new that nobody else is doing here in Bourbon Country. Plus, you get a free sweet tasting glass at the end of it. I guarantee you, you're going to end up being one of the many people that's also leaving us a 5-star review. So make sure you come and check us out. You can book your reservation by going to pursuitspirits.com and clicking the Visit Us button. From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixirs Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at whiskeyambitions.com. Hey everybody, welcome back. It's another episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. I'm Kenny.
Hey, and I'm Ryan.
Fred Minnick here.
And we are going to be talking about something that is near and dear to our hearts, which is basically collecting. I mean, This is something that as you get into the whiskey world, the bug bites you. I mean, I remember for me, the bug bit me pretty bad around 2014, late 13 timeframe, and I kind of went ham. And I was buying all kinds of stuff. By mid-2015, I probably had 80 different bottles, and then it just didn't stop from there. It continually got worse. And I don't really know if it's the psyche or what gets into you, or if it's just like you get into a hobby and you turn it to 11. But I think that happens to a lot of people. Like, we find something that we really gravitate towards and we really go all in with just kind of collecting. But this spans all kinds of different types of realms. I mean, you can go watches, you go cars, especially on the very high end. You got Pokemon cards. I mean, it goes to a lot of different places.
Yeah, there's a lot of mid-40-year-old men collecting Pokemon cards.
To be fair, I think the first thing I ever collected was Pogs.
Yeah, I did have some Pogs, but I had tons of baseball cards. Love baseball cards.
Yeah.
I think I got too late into baseball cards where it was already kind of like past the prime and there was just too much of it out there. And you never came away with anything good because it was just so many of them. You had Tops, you had Elite, you had so many of them out there. It's just like nothing was valuable.
We would go to baseball card stores. I would go and get... I have some pretty cool. My parents gave my son Rowan my collection, and it was pretty cool going through and like remembering all the players. I would just go hunt and chase and whatnot. So
it was
Were you like, don't touch that when you're bending the corner?
Yeah, I remember. Remember the Bo Jackson rookie card was like my top prize. Like trying to find one of those.
And I had a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card.
I did too. Ken Griffey. Deion Sanders was one of my favorite players. So hunting one of those down, that was always.
My uncle had a Nolan Ryan rookie card.
Yeah, I got one of those too. Jose Canseco, all those.
Dear Lord, why are we worried about money with the distillery? Sell your damn baseball cards.
I need to.
Do you have an Honus Wagner?
Oh, no. Don't have that.
Oh, that would be.
That's the one.
That's like the creme de la creme.
That's like having a Babe Ruth rookie card.
It's like having a Babe Ruth baseball.
I think it's actually bigger than a Babe Ruth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or a Babe Ruth baseball, like
the Sandlot. Yeah, that's what I was kind of going with too. What about you, Fred? Did you collect a lot of stuff when you were growing up as a kid?
Yeah, just baseball cards. You know, I was pretty. I collected knives. You know, so like homemade knives and stuff when I was a kid, and I would trade baseball cards for better knives. And looking back, that was a pretty dumb hobby. You know, because the baseball cards they accrued value and everything, but the knives because I would use them. I had a lot of like tribal knives. And I had a lot of old 1800s era cowboy knives that were just had like little leather braids wrapped around them and stuff. It was kind of cool, but I ended up losing them all. But my prize collection.
How do you lose a bunch of knives?
Caught moving.
Yeah.
And I was going to get to that. But I collected comic books and I had the number 6 Spider-Man. I had the number 1 Conan and I had a bunch of, an incredible collection. When I moved to college, my mom threw them away. And it's a continuing discussion
at
my family.
I hate going to Thanksgiving with you every year, but it always comes up.
I mean, there's some things you just don't ever get over. That's one of them.
Well, this is going to be a fun conversation because it's going to lead into how there's other modern ways of collecting, and especially in the sneaker game that our guest really knows a lot about today. So today on the show, we have Matt Cusick. He's the writer at Malt Review. He also likes to go by a social media nuisance, a chat room all-star, but he's also Q from the North Side. So Matt, welcome to the show.
I have like 3 other nicknames, but I just want to let you guys know, I totally negotiated way over my head because all I ever really wanted was to sub in for Brian Hara on the round table. And somehow I ended up with a whole episode. So hopefully I'll make it worth your time.
Yeah. Wait, we're bad at negotiating.
Brian's the one who always shows up.
Yeah. I know.
Why would you go after Brian's spot?
Well, because we both like basketball and one of us is handsome. And the other one's me.
There you go.
Well played.
Now, Matt's actually been a longtime supporter of the show. He's been around since the very beginning. I know you probably aren't an avid listener out there. You're not seeing. He is actually wearing one of the original issued Bourbon Pursuit t-shirts that ever went out. But yeah. It pains me to look at how bad our graphics were back then. Oh, but yeah.
All right, I'll put my jacket on, Kenny. I'll hide my arms. It's all right. Jeez. But yeah, I do want to thank you guys for the opportunity just because, you know, it might sound cliche, but you guys are like the soundtrack to my bourbon journey. Because I feel like we were like along the same path. Like when you guys started in 15, I was maybe like a year behind you guys. Like I was the guy like stopping at roadside bourbon places, looking for dusties and entering raffles and standing in line.
Are you $8 million in debt now?
I skipped that part, but yeah. I don't have a cool brand.
Yeah. There you go. But the other thing, like I said, by the way, if you ever come and watch a roundtable live, he's always in the chat and he's always the one kind of razzing everybody on there. So he's got just a great sense of humor.
Yep, poking the bear.
He's a great host. I was able to visit Chicago. We went out one time. I remember, I forget where we went. I just remember I had a Sloppy Joe.
Longman and Eagle. You had the power.
That place is great.
Yeah. That's a great place.
Yeah. Yes. I got a great whiskey selection too.
Exactly. Yeah. We went there and I was like, it's like 11 o'clock. I don't know if I'm in the mood for drinking whiskey right now, but
yeah. Matt convinced you. Twisted your arm.
It was before I was getting a flight back home, but yeah.
Yeah. And there was, I think they usually have like a Blanton's pick and Kenny's like, well, I'm starting my own brand. So, playing cool.
That doesn't interest me.
There we go. No. But the other thing we wanted to invite Matt on the show about is because he has another passion as well outside of whiskey and kind of talk about shoes. And because I think this is really going to be where sneakerheads and this kind of collide, and we can see where there's going to be a lot of similarities in how sneaker collecting and whiskey collecting really kind of come together.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm part of like three hobbies, especially with the golf. And I know, Ryan, you're a golfer too, that these three hobbies all kind of like exploded during the pandemic. So it was really cool because like as I got my growth, I was getting people DMing me, hey, what whiskey should I buy my boss from like the sneaker side of my following? And then from the whiskey side, they're like, hey, can you get me those Jordans? And the answer is no. I can't. You know what I mean?
But like the Pappy, right?
Right, exactly. And you know what? Actually, I have like all these like analogies and things like that because I think there's a lot of things in both communities that are very similar. Like there's behaviors. I would argue there's no such thing as a pure flipper anymore in either community, right? Like people flip to trade to get different inventory or just to make a couple bucks to buy something off a secondary, right? Like there's a couple like mega flippers, I agree. But I think for the majority, all of us are like a little bit flipper, a little bit hoarder, a little bit collector, right?
We're all screwed up,
yeah.
Basically.
You know, I always say my favorite color is gray because, you know, I'm an economist by my educational background, supposedly. They gave me a piece of paper. And, you know, our favorite answer is it depends. And everything lives in a shade of gray. There is no black or white, right? So when we talk about like the communities, I find some things are like, we all want stuff that's exclusive, but attainable. We all want it to be like really rare, but really cheap as well, right? So like,
yeah,
get, man,
yeah, I know.
It's so
sounds just like a whiskey geek.
And then when we talk about like, you know, the families of shoes, like, yeah, Jordan, the Jordan 11, hey, that's the one that drops every winter, right? That's the one that he wore when he came back and it's got the patent leather. He wins 72 games in it. It's legendary. And the thing is, it comes out every fall. Everybody gets excited about it, just like Pappy. Pappy comes out every fall. Everybody gets excited about it, right? And here's the difference, though, is I think, you know, I never hear sneaker people tear down Jordan the way that people tear down the Buffalo Trace AT collection and the Pappy thing, which I always find interesting because, look, I'm not saying they're the end-all be-all, but I think a lot of this bourbon boom has been thanks to them. And you would never hear, like, sneaker people tear down Jordan the way that people willingly, you know, tear down the Van Winkles or any of that stuff. And look, I'm not saying
like Michael's like producing artificial scarcity to like make this all happen.
Well, and I think it's an accepted fact, especially like in sneakers, that the sneakers and the colorways that we really want and the models that we want, like you're only getting a Jordan 11 once a year. In the spring, you're getting the low top and you're just getting that colorway for that season. And then you got it.
But how many Jordans are produced?
Well, that's a really great question. So they don't usually release numbers, but usually the 11.
Sounds familiar.
Right? You're going to find a lot of things that are very related. But with the 11, they usually release numbers. So they do release numbers because there are moments in sneaker history that I think foreshadow some things that you guys should be worried about. Like in the round table, when I am razzing you guys, and sometimes you're like, well, I wish this would happen or I wish this would go away. I'd be like, look at the sneaker industry and kind of be careful what you wish for, because when power consolidates, it doesn't usually work out for the consumer, right? Like, here's a great example. So I'll try not to make this like a sneaker history thing. I'll try and, you know.
Oh, okay. Like, dive into it.
At least I think this is what this we talk bourbon all day. This is refreshing. Keep talk as long as you want about sneakers.
So I would say, like, foreshadowing, I think the sneaker game is 20 years ahead of where the whiskey game is today, right? And it is a bigger market because there's no age restriction. Like, everybody can be a sneakerhead. And, you know, I think it's just a footwear game, honestly. Like, I went to the Crusaders event. Our guy Terry from Oklahoma, love his cowboy boots, right? Like, you can appreciate well-made boots, whether they're, you know, or Cole Haans and stuff like that. So we all appreciate footwear, right? Now, there are moments in sneaker history that totally changed the game. Like back in the mid-2000s, and this is going to sound like single barrels, is Nike did a really concerted effort to like partner with boutique streetwear shops, right? And especially in New York. So this one New York hub, they got a Dunk. Now, if you're wondering like, oh God, okay, now what's this family, right? Like, this is the Four Roses fans of sneakerheads, right? Like, Dunks come in a million colors. Only a true Dunk fanatic can tell you what's a true chunky dunky Ben and Jerry 10 grand pair of shoes.
And this is Nike Dunks, right?
Yeah, Nike Dunks,
I have
right?
the Nike Dunks, but they're like the $79.99 ones.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right? So you got like a, no offense, basic colorway,
totally.
Right? And also, like, right now there's a resurgence. Like, all of the guys our age were wearing multicolor Technicolor Dreamcoat kind of shoes for the last few years. So Panda Dunks became the most popular thing on teenage girls the last 2 years, right? Those just simple black and white ones. So anyways, mid-2000s, New York, Pigeon Dunks. It's a gray shoe with a pigeon on it. And the release just goes haywire. People are lined up around the block. They're blocking other businesses. The police have to show up. And it goes kind of haywire. And Nike starts to get bad publicity. And they said, oh, you know, what ended up being us trying to build up goodwill among the streetwear community now has bad will with the city of New York. So they said, you know, we're going to pull back. Everything's going to be released through our Nike towns or our preferred retail partners like Foot Locker, House of Hoops. So that lasted like 3 years. And then, well, what if you don't live by one of those retailers? You know, is that the right thing to do? And then even then, there was always like shady things of like, oh, you know, the manager sold 11 of the 50 pairs. The other 39 went to friends and family out the back. They just rung the register out at the right time. So then Nike said, okay, that's not right either. So I give Nike a lot of credit. And on our podcast.
My God, there is a lot of similarities here,
so,
isn't there?
Okay, so, all right. These people show up. Is it just a first come, first serve? Or do they do raffles? Do they do lotteries? Kind of like, you know, liquor stores do?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
So through the years, everybody's tried these different systems, right? Especially like in big cities, when you have people lining up around the block. Even when they moved it to Nike Town releases, well, then the city, the municipalities like Chicago and New York were like, well, okay, when do these people start lining up? Is it 2 days before, the day before, the night before? You can't have them sleeping on the sidewalk, right? So that's kind of the hard thing, right? So then they would go to a raffle system, but then there's always like this question of, is it legit, right? Who's rigging the raffle? Who's doing that? So Nike pulled back and they said, you know what we're going to do? Because not everybody lives anywhere. We're going to create an app called Sneakers. And I'm going to pause there because right now, every single sneakerhead listening to this just let out a sigh. Because it is probably the worst thing that ever happened to the shoe game.
Really?
It's available nationwide, but the problem is you still see people, they're able to source 10 pairs, 20 pairs, 30 pairs. And I give Nike credit because, you know, they communicate with us through our podcast that we do. And they say, look, we don't want flippers. That's not good for business. We want people wearing our shoes, consuming the shoes, because that's the best advertisement is seeing somebody walk down the street with a pair of shoes maybe that you saw 30 years ago, right? And you're like, oh, where can I go get those, right? They don't like it either. Look, the people that found ways to circumvent the retailer, well, now just the tech folks like Kenny, I always joke, are going to find
with
ways.
With all those scrapers and all the.
Yeah, those are good days.
Yeah. And I'll give Nike credit because then they reinvested. So like very profitable company, right? They reinvested and they said, you know what? We're going to become operationally excellent. They cut Amazon out of their business because they're like, you know, most people go to Amazon because Amazon could ship and deliver faster than anybody else. And Nike said, well, we'll just do it ourselves. Why would we give Amazon this money? Because we're perfectly capable. I think if you guys got rid of distributors, do you guys think they could flip the switch and like all of a sudden, you know, could Four Roses become operationally excellent and deliver whiskey?
No,
I don't think so.
That'd be very tough, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. The distribution game that would take years to figure that one out, because it's not. Here's the thing is, like, you got to have your mainstays, your products that get on the shelves, and every single liquor store would have to reach out to every single distillery and put in their orders. And that would, there's no way that they have the capability to do that probably.
Yeah. So they would end up hiring people anyways. Right. So in some ways, like, distributors are a necessary evil, because what Nike ended up doing when they did that is they choked out the mom and pop shop. Because also through the years, they also started saying, hey, you know what? Like, these Jordans are getting a lot of buzz. We need you to reinvest in your store, right? If you're going to carry our really limited Jordans, you either have to buy all the apparel that goes along with it that nobody was buying.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that sounds just like whiskey.
Boy, it's Jesus, right?
We've heard this story.
Or, you know, I had one shop by me that had to invest $30,000. To be fair, you know, you would walk in and it's a mom and pop shop and there's like boxes of clothing falling down on your head, right? It's like the not the most ideal thing. And this is where I know that the marketing people in the liquor stores will be hearing this, or at least in the distilleries, because if they start forcing that on mom and pop shops, saying like, hey, you want to carry Pursuit United, you better have some really nice tile in this place or a standee.
We don't care about your tile.
But who knows? Like, that's what he's saying. He's like,
yeah, right. No, I know.
We're talking 20 years ahead of time. So maybe it is. It's like, if the big guys are like, yeah, you know, our whiskey is, you know, we have $1,000 bottles. Like, we're not going to be in this dingy carpet kind of liquor store.
See, that's the good and bad of it, right? Like, if a distributor comes at you and you can order from like 20 different brands, the distributor kind of doesn't care. They can't exert any power over you as long as you're ordering like one of the 20, right? And I know that's not music to
hear. But I would assume Nike has the logistics set up from getting the shoes from the factory to these retail outlets. I would assume that they have that in-house, right? They're not using a third party to make that happen, or would they be?
You mean to like get into Foot Locker?
Yeah.
Well, don't look at me, look at him.
I don't know. I thought this was a table.
Well, it is a podcast. It is a podcast. Nobody can see where you're looking.
So that's true.
It's all right. Yeah. Well, actually, there was a decision by Nike, and Nike's, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in this. And I know in whiskey, we have the big six or big seven, and really it's Nike and Jordan. Like at some point, Jordan is going to be the number two shoe company in America without having a running division or anything like that. And then you still have, you know, really good competitors. Like, Nike is streamlining right now because they have On Running and Hoka Running nipping at their core competency.
Yeah. You see Hoka everywhere in the marathon.
Yeah, who is like that second or third? Is it Reebok, Adidas, probably Adidas?
It varies, but actually you'd be shocked. For a lot of years, it was Skechers.
Oh, really?
So okay. Skechers, you know, not playing that like, hey, athlete worship kind of like, hey, here's affordable, comfortable, do wide sizes, do more of the bigger sizes and things like that. So there's still a market for that. You know, Payless Shoes still does a ton of business, right? Like, one of Nike's best-selling shoes is still the Monarch, which is, you know, most of us know as the dad grilling shoe, right? Like, yes. No, kind of like that big chunky shoe. You know, they have Monarch Mondays on the Nike campus and things like that. But Nike did make a decision. I don't know how long ago this was. And there's several brands that have done this where they looked at it and they said, you know what? 80% of our business is done with our top 20% of our customers. Mm-hmm. So why not pull back? Why not consolidate? I don't know if liquor would ever get that way. Like, could you guys ever see like Jim Beam saying like, yeah, we don't need the little places, or the distributors will always sell to little places?
Well, I think the retailers are playing that game themselves, you know.
You see that kind of in California, there was that lawsuit, you know, against Total Wine, where mom and pops were saying Total Wines were getting better pricing, this and that, and they can't afford. And then there was that, I don't know what happened with that, but
it's happened in Tennessee, California. I mean, everywhere they go, they undercut the market, and it's just how they play the game. So the difference between shoes and liquor is that big old thing called prohibition. There was never a prohibition for you can't fucking wear shoes anymore.
Well, because all the regulations.
You've been doing too much dunking. You know, I mean,
this is illegal.
shoes do not ever have to worry about the biggest problem that liquor does, and that it's so regulated.
Yeah.
You know, and so they definitely do have control. There's lawsuits going on that's kind of talking about that, but they could never dictate at the level that Nike can. Or Apple. Apple's another one that dictates to retailers. They could never dictate like that because there's actual federal law that says that.
But the distributors can.
The distributors can.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the distributors, the people who will push out mom and pop, it'll be more like Walmart and Amazon to small business is going to be the chain stores. And here in Kentucky, you know, I remember talking to a small mom and pop about when Total Wine came in, because they all fought it. He's like, oh, we've been dealing with this with Liquor Barn for years. Like, this is nothing new for us. Like, we know how to go up against the chains. And I would argue that there's probably not a better state for mom and pop liquor stores than Kentucky. Like, they do really well here. They're not hurting. If they are hurting, then their business model is not following a lot of them that I know. So I would say that it would never be Sazerac pushing out a mom and pop. It'd be more of the market kind of happening.
So true story. So I used to have a mom and pop that would sell me shoes early before the release date. And, you know, eventually, and you're going to love this story, because eventually it became, oh yeah, just pay ahead of time and come pick it up in a week. Awesome. Then it became, hey, can you put an extra $25 down as a reserve? Okay, cool. And then eventually became just full blown secondary. Like, it was like, okay, you want the Jordans, they go for $400 on eBay. This is what you're going to have to pay. And here's the other true story. So my friend, I've tried to coach people up, like how you play the game in Illinois, right? Like, you either enter raffles, stay in line, or you have to be a good customer to get allocated whiskey. And it's my chiropractor. Oh my gosh. By the way, my chiropractor is going to be so amazed that I'm on the podcast with Fred Minnick, because yes.
Hey, you should tell him, like,
what not are, us, all right? No, I'm just kidding.
I love watching like chiropractor videos of them popping necks and stuff. Like, they get the big old rope thing out and pop someone's neck, and then they go, and they're like, I can move my neck for the first time in 20 years.
Well, I go to get adjusted, and I end up talking about Fred Minnick for 10 minutes while we're getting adjusted. I said, dude, stop shopping around at 80 different stores. Stick to one store and figure out what's going on. Well, true story, he gets to, you know, allocation season, and he's getting nervous. He's not getting a call. He's not getting an email. He's like, am I going to get anything? I don't know. I don't run the store. Like, why are you bugging me about it? You know, did you do everything I said? You know, don't be shitty to the people that work there. That's like my number one rule. You know, don't ask for Blantons, and you should be good. So at the end of the year, he talks to the manager, and the manager goes, look, I'm going to take care of you, but I got to let you know, you're not in my top 100 customers. But don't worry, I automatically knock out 40 of them because they are liquor stores that come to buy from me.
Oh, wow.
And he, you know, case discount, they get the case discount, they charge secondary or, you know, the extra 10, 20 bucks in their stores, and it's enough for them to live off of.
And this is probably from one of the large retailers in Illinois, and that's what they're, okay, I can, it rhymes with Schminis, got it.
And I like my guys, so hopefully, you know, but it's a reality that some of these mom and pop stores can't get the stuff that they want to get. Right. The distributor might be selling them, hey, you can only get XYZ. And they're like, well, OK, you know, if I come in and I buy a case of just regular old Elijah Craig, like if you were a store manager at Minnie's, you know, speaking of Disney, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Why are we hiding the name of Binnie's? Why?
Because I still go there and I love Binnie's.
Yeah. But that's okay. I mean, you're talking positively. I think like so.
But it's true, you know, like they can get the stuff that those smaller guys can't. So they go and they, you know, create like a little mini secondary market just off of that.
Interesting.
Yeah. It is interesting.
Yeah. Now, kind of keep going in the shoe game here. So you said you were going to get into the Disney thing. What was that about?
So the cool thing about like sneakers, it's interesting. Like bourbon is older than sneakers, right? But none of us are like, man, there's that bottle of bourbon we couldn't get when we were 13. I can't wait to get again.
Yeah.
So you said you saw a pair of shoes at Disney?
Yeah. So I was a big Troop fan when I was growing up. I had every set of Troops, and it was Troop versus British Knight at that time. And I had all the Troops, and they were red, and British Knights were like black and like a dark blue. And I just was waiting for my kids, sitting down, looking at my phone, trying to get through a day at Disney. And I see these little pair of shoes walking by, and I'm like, are those Troops? And he had the little folded Velcro thing off to the side. And I was like, oh my God, are those coming back? And I just went up to this guy. I went up to him very quickly. I think he probably thought I was about to jump up, didn't he? Because I was like, hey, are those Troops?
I don't even know what Troops are.
And he's like, yeah. And I was like, are they coming back? Because I would buy a pair of Troops within 5 seconds of seeing. He's like, no, I've just kept these all these years.
And they survived.
He survived. And he told me he bought several of them, and he had them in shoeboxes, and he pulls them out.
I'm having to look these up. Oh, okay. I remember those.
Are they like Ruse, but they had the pouch on the side?
Yeah. Is that the Troop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you bring that up. So I have a story. I'm a big proponent of drinking your bourbon, right? Like, open your bourbon, don't store this stuff. And it's the same thing for your shoes. Like, wear your shoes. I'm wearing a pair of Air Jordan 3s that I've had for 10 years, right? Like, there's no sense in saving this.
It's brave on a rainy, dirty day here in Kentucky.
I brought two other shoes just in case.
That's a true sneaker.
Yeah, your parking lot's pretty clean.
Do you have like just like a jar of like cleaner, or not jar, but a can of cleaner?
No, because for me, actually, the beauty is when these things get dirty. Like, I think the Air Jordan 3 is one of my favorite shoes because, like, as it gets worn, we had a guy in our podcast. His name is Jacques Slade. He goes by Cousteau. He's a big sneakerhead, big in the, you know, he does tons of stuff. And his favorite pair is an 18-year-old pair of Jordan 3 True Blues that he had resold. Like, almost like you would go to the cobbler. Years. Yeah. He's just
so it's like those stupid dirty goose, the Golden Goose shoes. Like those things amaze me. Like how that just took off, like, in the dirtier the better. Yeah. Like I'm just trying to understand the rationale behind that.
I'll tell you this story is like my first job out of college. This basketball ref was running a park district and I was a ball field laborer. So I was the guy that laid down the softball lines. And then for like 7 hours, I napped inside the field house. But, you know, he was a big Disney guy. So Dan Reamer, 6'4", monstrous guy, took his family to Disney every year. And when his kids got too old, he kept going to Disney without his kids. He's like, forget them. Right. But he was a sneakerhead also. And he's like, dude, I've got three pairs of Jordan 3s from 1993. I'll sell you a pair for what I paid for them. I'm like, oh my gosh, thanks, Dan. So I kept them and they meant a lot because it was like the first like full price Jordan I ever bought technically, you know, the first Jordan I bought with my own money. And then I kept them in a box, And then I'm at my parents' house for Thanksgiving 1 year. Probably.
He was the same size foot as you and everything.
Size 13. Yeah, which is awful because it's so hard. But anyways, I opened the box one Thanksgiving and the heels are crumbled. So I will say your shoes will definitely not last as long as whiskey will. And, you know, that's why it's just like, man, I never wore those things. And it's not even about the money, right? It's just about, you know, he gave them to me so that they would be used. And I basically like failed him in that sense. So I think when we get gifted sneakers, like same thing with bottles. Like I'm sure you guys have so many bottles, but like, are there any bottles that have been gifted to you that have like special meaning and you never like want to drink or open?
There's a few that I'm like, you save them for a rainy day or you save them for a right occasion. And it's like, I'm still waiting and I don't know when that's going to be. Yeah. So
I definitely have some stored away in a safe that are supposed to be for like my son's 21st, my daughter's wedding, you know, special moments like that. But now you're got me freaking out. They're going to crumble.
Because they're all looking more whiskey, right?
Yeah.
As long as you store them, all right.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's the good thing. Like you've covered it on your Above the Char a bunch of times. If you store whiskey, and that's the best thing about whiskey is I can't share my shoes, right? Like, hey, here, take
the
left.
You can't have like a shoe, you can't have a shoe licking party or a shoe smelling party. Like, oh my gosh, get a whiff of this glue and the rosin here.
One of my guys, Nightwing, who is part of the Wear Testers group on YouTube, like that's his thing is like the smell of a fresh new shoe. And like,
I love
he does the deep inhale. Yeah. Like, man, how many
so
glues?
Yeah, that brings up a good point. What does the sneaker community do? Like, I mean, cause like, as Fred said, we hang around, get different bottles, share them. Do y'all like meet up and like, oh, let me look at your collection or whatever, you know?
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And you can get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone. Transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/bourbon. If you're anything like me, then you can't get enough about bourbon. And that's why I'm a subscriber to Bourbon Plus magazine. Bourbon Plus is a quarterly publication that tells the stories from the heart of bourbon, the farmers who grow the grain, the distillers who labor over the process, and the people, like you and me, who raise their glasses to celebrate it all. Subscribe to Bourbon Plus magazine today at bourbonplus.com, that's P-L-U-S.com, and use code PURSUIT at checkout for $5 off your subscription.
as Brett said, we hang around, get different bottles, share them. Do y'all like meet up and like, oh, let me look at your collection or whatever, you know?
So fantastic question, because I was going to say that is something that is similar and dissimilar about both communities. So while we have bottle shares, like there are these like sneaker cons that go around the country and people get together. And usually you have the resellers that want, you know, really big money for their shoes and their saran wrapped. So what happened to me doesn't happen to them. And people get together and they say, hey, man, that's cool. Like you're wearing, you know, and I would say also, it's very similar in the fact that like if somebody bought a vertical of Pappy today and posted it online, they would get roasted, right? Same thing. Somebody starts like, oh, I bought these Louis Vuitton sneakers or I bought like something super expensive. Everybody's like, well, you just bought your way into the hobby, dude. Like if you just buy your way into the hobby, you lose respect in that sense. But it is a little bit different because there is a lot of snootiness, at least with sneakers too. You know, there's like a lot of like jealousy, I think. Whereas I think like if somebody snags something nowadays with bourbon community, most people are like, oh, dude, great snag. You know, good for you. You as long as you're not posting your sixth antique bottle next to the other five that are unopened.
Those are annoying.
That's
when you paid secondary form and all stuff like that. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Exactly. And we all know that there's more to whiskey than Buffalo Trace. And we all know that there's more to Pappy, right? It's just, you know.
But is there more to sneakers than Jordan?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And that's what
troops
kind of talk me about. Yeah, talk me about what you would consider, like, if we're going to figure out, like, the analogy of, we'll say Nikes, we'll just say Nikes, Pappy, whatever.
Like, the analogy to
Well, Jordan, like who's Heaven, who's Heaven Hill? Who's
Weller?
Who's, if you were to figure out, like, who's, like, second tier, third tier, and, like, those types of offerings.
I would say, too, it's also, like, we're being very heavy on the, what I would consider to be the basketball audience. My wife's a runner. And that community, she's a sneaker collector. She's got 30 pairs of shoes that take up all the space in the closet, and I have nowhere to put my stuff.
She'll kill her. She'll kill her.
And she's got them still in boxes. And also, she collects these friggin' sunglasses called Gooder that all the runners use. And so she has all these designer sneakers, and she never freaking wears them or anything. And they're just there. But the shoe community and running is insane. And they also do limited edition hydration packs and stuff. I'm just like, what the fuck is a limited edition hydration pack? And that's then I plastic. Get a jiu-jitsu and they start doing limited edition rash guards and I'm falling for that. So I guess I get it. You know, we're all suckers.
We all love scarcity.
Well, I always joke like the whiskey collection makes me feel like an adult Beanie Baby collector with an alcohol problem. Yeah. You know, like, so we all have our thing, right? And I almost say like, I almost would break out Nike in the different divisions and even the Jordans. Like I would say Jordan 11s, just that silhouette is Pappy. And then the Wellers would be like the low top version of the Jordan 11 because that industry is so big. And then to Fred's point, there's a running community and they have YouTube reviewers and they have people because the running community, it's like, oh, does this match your gait? Is this for a heel strike, a toe strike, a midfoot strike, right?
I don't even know what that means. Front of your foot, midfoot, back foot.
Okay.
I've worked in so many industries, you know, and I think that's why I connect with Fred a lot because I'm always like passionate about product, right? Like being able to pull the stories from product engineers and people that design things and the decisions that go into it. Like that's what you do. You preach bourbon, right? But you're telling the story of the master distiller and, you know, why they picked this blend or why they picked this proof or why they picked this label.
So right? Would sneakerheads be similar in the whiskey geeks that there's not like new shoes that they adopt, like stuff that hasn't been previously made before? Or is that like all they chase after? Or like if Nike comes out with something new, like is there a correlation to that too?
So in the same way that we talk about that person that only chases Weller antique foolproof. There is a sneaker collector that only does retros. That's what we call them when they bring shoes back is a retro. Mm. That's all they want to wear. They don't want to try anything new. And I think that's one reason why like the basketball signature shoe market is dying. Like people aren't like really like running to stores to buy the newest LeBron shoe or the newest, you know, Kevin Durant shoe. But the Kobe's sell out like that. The Jordans sell out like that. So yeah, you know, people go to their old favorites.
So there's one other similarity that I can think of, you know, the barrel stickers that everyone's all about. There's this huge world of artist collaborations doing the painting. And there, remember Lil Nas X?
Lil Nas X.
Lil Nas X put blood in the shoe, right? Yep. Remember that?
Yep. Nike ended up suing them.
No. Yeah, they ended up suing each. They ended up suing them and stuff. Who won that, by the way?
I don't know where that ended up. I don't know if they just kind of ceased and desist because he ended up selling like the 97 pairs or whatever it was, but his blood was in it, and now like he's on the flip side, right? Like he's on God's side for this newest album release or whatever that is. But yeah, Nike does not like the like unsanctioned or like. You know, same thing, like a lot of athletes do custom shoes so that they pop on TV. They're like, okay, I can't get a signature shoe, but I can take the Nikes that Nike sends me and send them to artists. You know, my good friends is Nomad Customs out of Florida, and he does a lot of like MLB players and, you know, country music stars. Then there's Govern. They'll do swaps and they'll do a lot of custom stuff.
One of the hip hop groups I'm friends with, Run the Jewels, they did a collab with Nike and it like sold out like that. It's like, I don't know if it's one of the more popular ones, but they were like, you know, we talked to them that this is like one of their most favorite things to brag about. Not like Grammy nominations or anything. Like, yeah, we sold out at our Nike collab. It's kind of cool. It's like a big brag for these celebrities that get that look to do that. And that's how you know, man, that's how you know the sneaker world just transcends. It cuts through everything. And I'm wondering, you know, Bourbon does hit all walks of life, but does the collector hit all walks of life, or is it pretty well to the folks with money?
That's a great conversation about overextension too, right? Like I think in both communities, people overextend themselves beyond their means, chasing, you know, like I always tell my buddies that just get into it, like don't do what Kenny did. Don't buy 80 bottles in the first 2 years, right? Chances are those labels won't be much. But if you're talking about like just the size of the pie, like, you know, like the people that listen to this podcast we talk about all the time are like the 1%.
All wonderful people, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. You're listening to me. If you've made it this far, I owe you a drink. DM me, right? But one of the things that we talk about is, okay, like how big is that population? How big is that amount of people that we're talking to? And in the sneaker game, there is levels to it too, right? Like there's people that collect their retro Jordans and they go about their business and they don't like follow the blogs and stuff like that. But then there's people like in our world, in that podcast, the Swoosh Life podcast that I do co-host of, is like, man, we nitpick the decisions. Like should the eyelet been green, right? Should we have done, you know, scuffed Nubuck for that Georgia Peaches edition? Like, you know, we love talking about like design decisions because to us, shoe is art. And I think in a lot of ways, for me, whiskey is art too,
it
right?
It is, yeah.
You know, we talk about like, this is recent, and I know the podcast doesn't always release at the right time, but 1924 tenure. You decided to make 24 the tenure. There's no 1920 tenure. And then you decided to use a mash bill that might be from early times. So it's like Prince of Kentucky, but it's not King of Kentucky, but it's labeled as part of Whiskey Row. And I think as a marketer, my marketing mind thinks that's art. You know, and I know you might hate it because I think you usually hate the marketing people when they step into things.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny, like we had a deep conversation the other day about, is it a marketing company or a whiskey company? And then we've just been hanging out and like we'd see a car. I'm like, is that really a car manufacturer or is it a marketing company? And so it's like led to this whole thing. But yeah, marketing, I feel like there's some things that don't need marketing, right? And Jordan's become one of those. A lot of shoes have just become one of those.
And that's why I say Jordan is pappy, right? So yeah. Like the Van Winkles can take their name anywhere, put it on something, and people will gravitate towards it. And that's okay.
So do you roll your eyes at someone like me? So I like sneakers, but I'm not obviously enthralled with it like you are, or you know, your community is. But I've been buying those Dunks in just different colors to match them. Remember, you're like, oh, that lame loser, you know, he's just a masses, you know, kind of like I look at someone's like, oh gosh, you're just buying every different color Weller just because you think it's cool. Like, do you look down upon me because of that?
It's interesting because I consider like just the way that I was like brought up. And I think if you're participating in the community, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Right. And I know eventually that person that brags about all the Weller they bought will eventually branch out and buy Pursuit United and they'll buy Elijah Craig and they'll realize that there's other flavors because I think it grows the category. I think it's fantastic that you have all these different colors of Dunks because guess what? You're not wearing Crocs.
Oh, that's all the kids want to wear these days.
Oh, my kids have two, you know, here's the thing. The worst thing is the things that you put on the Crocs.
All the pins and stuff.
Yeah, because I'm breaking my fingertips on it. And then the worst thing is I think they need like another two pairs just so that we don't lose all the little things that grandma keeps buying them.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, all the little kiosks in the mall that have all those things.
You know, we talked about like a lot of the comparisons, but I feel like I haven't seen Reebok like have a presence anywhere. Is Reebok like a
I know, like, bring back the pumps.
Yeah, they're bringing back, they're doing a limited run of the, it was called the Reebok Preseason, which Emmitt Smith made popular. I think the problem—
I remember those, yeah.
Reebok's facing two problems. One, they got bought by Adidas, so they kind of got buried.
And really, kind of really
like Old Crow with Jim Beam.
Thank you. Because all they do is release the Iverson question. Yeah. That's the only shoe that they release. And it's like, okay, great. We got the old, like, can we get like an age stated Old Crow or something or bring back some lead decanters, right? Like, that's what we all want in the whiskey community. The problem with them, the second problem is that a lot of the athletes that they were known for, Frank Thomas baseball, Emmitt Smith football, not really
Shaquille O'Neal, they're all Viagra commercials now.
and then Shaq had, you know, they just recently took over the company. So Shaq's running the company again with Iverson.
Well, and Reebok too really went hard into the CrossFit community. That's where they were kind of struggling. Then CrossFit kind of resurrected them.
So CrossFit resurrected them and then they kind of like killed their marketing team. So score one for the marketers because, you know, they redid their Vector logo. They were doing great. And then all of a sudden Under Armour swooped in and got like all that CrossFit UFC business.
Yeah.
And then Adidas just said, yeah, we're going to shelve it. We're just not going to focus in on it anymore. So that's kind of where Reebok's at right now. So with the Dunks coming back, there's a little bit of a comeback of the chunky shoe. So like you see like the Vomero 5, if your wife's a runner, you know, they're on like Vomero 20 something right now or 19. So, you know, they went back to the Vomero 5 and all of a sudden like that's the hot style shoe now. Everybody's wearing like runners from 2000.
Yeah. And I see all these like teenagers wearing like the old Air Force Ones now too. Like, you know, they wear them with sweatpants and high socks. It's like
Nelly brought that back when we were in high school.
Well, and just to warn you guys, the joggers are out now. So we need to upgrade to like, you know, the straight legs now. We're not going full wide leg yet.
Boot cut's not back yet. I usually wear joggers, but
I just
today I'm wearing jeans.
I mean, look, I understand fashion trends happen and things happen, but I'm still wearing something from the 1800s usually. So I don't give a shit. I'm just going to dress however I like. Wear whatever the hell I like.
Now I'm just trying to picture like what it is that he's wearing from the ACL.
Yeah, I know.
So the Ascot. Come on.
The actual Ascot is not from the 1800s.
It's one of them might be. It's pretty old. But I mean, in general, like you'll drain a credit card real quick if you try to keep up with fashion trends wherever it is. I mean, I still got shirts from 20 years ago I wear. And I was telling you all earlier, my favorite shirts to wear, like under my gi or just out in public, are my Bourbon Pursuit shirts. Like I wear those everywhere and they're so comfortable. And one time, you know, Jacqueline was like, asking me like, why don't you ever wear any other t-shirts? I was like, because I like the way this feels and I gotta rep Bourbon Pursuit.
Are they all approved by Kenny to be seen in public? Because evidently I brought back this throwback. I only wear what he gives me.
That was pre-new level.
Yeah, next level.
Or next level. Yeah.
This is for the sneakerheads. I guess I'm wearing the equivalent of a small window Air Max 1.
You're definitely wearing a different fabric than a small window Air Max 1.
I know those.
They brought back the Air Max 186. Yeah. And that's where it's like the Disney vault, right? It's like, wait, what do you mean you're bringing back the Air Max 1? Like you've been carrying it for the last 20 years. Like, no. It used to have a big window, you know, like the original version had a big window and they do a great job in sneakers of telling stories attached to all these products. Like when there is a Jordan color that comes out and they're like, well, this is because he wore this in Space Jam or he wore this in a commercial. And I think whiskey does that pretty well too. And I think that's why the legacy brands have a leg up because there's a story behind every single, whether it's true or not, or the person existed.
Who was that basketball player that he and his dad came out with a pair of shoes and they like ripped apart on the court?
Well, that's happened a couple times, especially like as Nike has gone to like some of like these lighter weight uppers.
Yeah.
It happened.
That was like Kwame Brown or something.
It happened with the Hyperflight. Yeah. It happened with the Jordan 37 most recently. Like, you know, one of the things is like as performance goes up, the only thing they can do is try and make the shoe lighter. And especially in basketball, Zion, like when Zion was at Duke, he tore through a shoe.
Oh, yeah. That was Zion. Yeah.
But you're talking about a guy that's, you know, 3 bills and 6'8", right? Like, you know, he's need a beefier shoe.
Eight, isn't he? Yeah. 7 foot? Zion's on 6'8"?
I think 6'8", 6'9". Yeah,
he's a big guy. Big boy.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want to block him out.
Yeah. Especially after he's had all those po' boys and crawfish down in New Orleans. Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of older Nikes. I had a pair of like, I think they were called like the Bacons.
Yeah, Nike Air Bacon.
Yeah. I can't remember the basketball player that they were for, but
might have been Tim Hardaway.
Yeah, that was Tim Hardaway. Yeah.
He was
so like, and I remember having the Scottie Pippins that said Air.
Yes.
You know,
Nike Air More Up Tempo.
Do any of those hold any weight or is it all Jordans, basically?
No, those do hold weight. And those are actually the ones, the Air More Up Tempo, it's like been steady. Like they release 2 to 3 colorways a year now. They even did a sandal that says Air on it. That's like that iconic thing. And fun fact, Scottie Pippen never even wore that version that you can buy. So the version that you could buy has Air Max. Scottie Pippen thought Air Max rode too high and he twisted his ankle one time in them. So all of his shoes had Zoom Air, no windows.
Wow.
But then he got mad at Nike because they don't pay him royalties on those. Mm-hmm. So Scottie Pippen only had four signature shoes. He only gets paid for those four signature shoes.
He gets mad
shoes.
About a lot of things.
He sure does, doesn't he?
What about any...
Because he sees Jordan just crushing it and he's like, I was part of that team.
True.
I gave his digits an okay score.
Yeah. Hey, what about like the value brands? I know you mentioned Skechers earlier, but are there any like Payless shoes or anything like that that... hold up over time or like have
the,
like
the
a collector's market.
It's like the rare breed.
Old granddad 114. You gotta manufacture and be like, it's going out of style. You gotta go pick them up now. Your Keds are gonna be gone forever.
That's where I was going.
not really, but there's an interesting analogy there.
I was thinking Vans or something like that.
Yeah, Vans are still around, you know. But, like the checkerboard one comes out every once in a while, but there's no like clamor. They don't build like any like big marketing value about it. But it's interesting because when we talk about whiskey, we're mostly talking about the allocated stuff and the limited releases, and we feed the hype machine. And in reality, you guys have always said on the revenue list, it's a drop in the bucket because everybody's buying like the standard, right?
Correct. So, 90% of the market's buying the standards.
So this is the interesting analogy for Jordan fans. Jordan has done a lot of what's called fusions, right? So you have the numbered shoes, right? Like 1 through 38, they're up to right now. Those come out once a year and then you retro some of them. And then there's always this discussion is like, was this the right colorway? Is it true to the original? And we argue, but then Jordan Brand's CEO just came out and said they made a ton of money off the fusions that all of the collectors do make fun of. So if you're buying like a mashup Jordan that has like, you know, pieces, like there's a Jordan called the 312 that I actually like. It's a mix of the Jordan 3, the Jordan 1, and the Jordan 2. I think it's pretty cool. All the collectors scoffed
at it. I thought it was just a Chicago. And that their 312, or was it?
Well, they did a good job. They did a good job mixing it up, right? They have a 678. They have a Jordan Spizike, which is an amalgamation of all the shoes that Spike Lee ever was in a commercial with. And people scoff at them, but they sell a ton of them. They're making a ton more revenue on those fusions than they are retros now. So same thing, like, yeah, we kind of scoff at like the Knob Creek limited editions. And at the end of the day, regular Knob Creek's like paying the bills, right? Like Jim Beam White Label's paying the bills.
Yeah. Another question I kind of have is LTOs. Like I want to kind of picture this as like Wild Turkey Diamond, Kentucky Owl. Like people that come out with an LTO and it just flops. Like does that happen?
Definitely. Definitely. Like just recently. And this is where like people start to talk about the bubble bursting. And that's the funny thing is I would say both collectors want their selected industry to fail. Whiskey collectors can't wait for the bubble to burst, right? Like they think 18-year-old stuff is just going to fall from the sky, right? And it's like, no, that genie's never getting put back in the bottle, guys. Same thing, the Jordan 1. Jordan 1 did a reimagined blue and black, and it sat. Now, the thing is, when you don't know the quantity that they made of, like you can't tell really, is it because the price is usually higher when they bring these things back because they have to bring them out of the vault? You know, is it the colorway didn't hit right or is the bubble bursting, right? Like I've seen it too where, you know, the Jordan 1 is having a great moment right now. Lows and highs, nobody wants the mids because they are built off the same last and look just like Dunks and Air Force Ones, right? So like that's the hot trend right now. But who knows? Like in the next few years, maybe threes are back in style. The fours are back in style. So, you know, LTOs, yeah, it is, you know, and people get consumer fatigue. I think you guys have felt that, right? Like there can't be a limited release every week, right? Like I remember back when Jordan would do a limited release like once a quarter and you're like, oh shit, I gotta get these. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, is that like, you can't even spot fakes anymore because you're like, wait a minute, did you guys do that 2 years ago or is that really like a fake? And what I'm seeing now with the younger kids that are wearing the straight legs, they're not wearing joggers anymore. The younger kids are getting more and more comfortable with what they call reps or dupes. Replicas or duplicates. Like they're like, I don't want to pay $500 for a Kobe. I want to wear the shoe. Who cares? I'm not playing basketball. I don't care if it feels like a brick on my feet, right? So I don't think that whiskey has an equivalent in that sense. But
watches do, though. I mean, you have watches that are, well, you know, on average, I'm just saying, let me finish my thought.
Yeah,
because you have watches that on average, they're, you know, $15,000 to $50,000 for these watches. And you can get dupes online for, I don't know, $500 to $1,500. And they look pretty good and they have movements, but they're not the legit thing.
I'll tell you what soured me on the watch and then we'll get to you in a second, Ryan. My first expensive watch that I bought, and you know, it was a Movado, right? And My first expensive watch is a Movado, and it's when tungsten carbide just came out. So I paid like the extra money for tungsten carbide, not knowing it's a man-made material. But I was like, oh, it'll never scratch. My brother, who's in high school, the next week at New Year's Eve has a Movado. I was like, how did you get a Movado? And his buddy's a watch guy, and he goes, I could tell which one's fake, right? And he just weighs it. And you could tell by the weight. But my brother's like, I don't care. I'm in high school. I got a Movado. Don't ask me why he was at a bar.
Does Rolex have like that standard version that everyone can get, or all Rolex is just these like rare allocated?
No, Rolex spans the entire portfolio. So you have the Oysters, you have Perpetuals, you have all different ways of kind of looking at it. So you have everything from a couple $1,000s up to, you know, Hulks and Pepsis that are very highly sought after that can go up for, you know, $8,000 to $15,000. So.
Yeah. And in every market, like there's somebody that's opportunistic and they might not really care about the Rolex. But this is where I say like there's shades of gray in this, right? Like I'm sure there's a guy with 20 Rolexes, but he also gets the limited release Rolex from his jeweler because he's a preferred customer and he flips it. Right. My brother dated this girl in high school again. And, you know, the dad got a new Ferrari every year because guess what he could do? He could drive the Ferrari, get 5,000 miles on it and then flip it. You know, because he had got in with the dealership. And it just happens like in any kind of collectible. And there's levels, right? Like, we're not collecting Ferraris.
Obviously.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely not. Maybe Lego Ferrari.
Yeah, I'm barely hanging on. Like, you know, and I've cut down my whiskey and my sneaker collection because that's the other thing is like...
Well, that was what I was going to bring up earlier is like, you know, Kenny and I have so much whiskey, so much bottles, like that I don't even chase them anymore. It's like, if I go get a bottle of whiskey, it's usually... And if I'm in another where I'm not at home, it's just buying something I know it's reasonably priced and okay. You know, it's yeah. like you get like where you're not even chasing the limited stuff anymore. And so that definitely you hit that in sneakers.
Oh, 1,000%. You know, like I've got.
So now you're down to dunks, back to dunks.
Well, the other thing too is like I try to stick to silhouettes that I like and silhouettes that I'm going to wear. Because like at this age, like I'm also running out of space, right? Like I got two small kids and who knows if they'll even like sneakers, if they'll even be my size. Who knows if they'll even want to drink my whiskey, you know? And that's the other thing, you know, sorry to get like all serious, but like the older you get, the more you think about your mortality, you start thinking about your health and you're like, all right, well, if I'm not here in 10 years, some jerk off is going to show up with my kids and just drink all my pappy anyway. So I might as well do it, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Jesus, very true. That's depressing.
I know.
But it's a true thing.
It is a true thing. But that's why you got to enjoy what you have now today, right? Like here, I mean, this is an experience I'm never going to forget. You got to take those memories with you. You know, pop something nice.
But if you don't do it responsibly, that might lead to you not being here in 10 years. That's
very true.
That's the thing. That's the thing about sneakers. Like, you know, you can't get cirrhosis from licking them.
Yeah, but you can run, you could, you know, spend your rent on it and stuff like that. And I think there's levels to collecting that, like, you know, when we talk about like the psychology of collecting, there's hoarding, which is when it's like, it reaches unsafe levels and you got, you know,
right.
I don't see a lot of people like hoarding shoes where like it's in your living space. But also like, don't overextend yourself. Like all of a sudden, you know, I got people that end up flipping whiskey bottles and shoes back because they went too far. You know, it's like knowing your limits. It is a lot like gambling. It's a lot like Pokemon. It's a lot like Pogs, right? Like you can get addicted to the thrill of the chase.
Yeah. And then I guess the other thing is we had a big softening in like the secondary market for whiskey. And because there was a huge buying spree, everything was a limited edition. Has that happened inside of the shoe world as well?
2,000%. I'm so glad you brought that up because it's almost like everything cratered at the same time. So this is where you start to look at macroeconomic things and it becomes very real, right? Like I always hear like both ways, like election years, people get optimistic. Election years, people get very pessimistic, right? And they start hoarding or they start turtling. And I think we see the consumer turtling and they've been turtling for like a year and a half, right? Like geopolitical reasons. Like the world's pretty shitty outside right now, right? Yeah.
So interest rates.
Yeah. And I don't think people want to bury themselves in even more debt, like collecting stuff, you know? And yeah, hey, you know what? I overspent during the pandemic. And we saw that like even golf shoes. Like I have Jordan golf shoes that were going for $1,000 a pair. They're probably down to like $400 a pair now. You know, and that's with the supply dwindling because a whole bunch of people bought those shoes. And especially like, I think the other thing about sneakers, it's a lot easier to flip on sneakers because you can go to eBay, you can go to GOAT, you can go to StockX. You know, I think once the interstate commerce walls break down, I think that's where the real money's at is whoever can like start, you know, like the StockX of whiskey, you know, so there's your seventh business idea, guys.
We'll roll that one.
Are there people with shoe bunkers like there are in bourbon?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have rooms. And I think that's the other thing, too, is I started to realize that I'm never going to compete with DJ Khaled, right? Like he's getting not only exclusive shoes, he has disposable income up the yin yang. Like I'm never going to build a shoe room that can compete with him. And same thing with some of like these whiskey collectors. Like I'm never going to, like I'll never have a whiskey room like Nate, or I'll never have a whiskey room like Fred or any of you guys, right? So like, who am I trying to impress? Like I should just buy the stuff that I like and enjoy it that way. And in fact, you know, right now, like these threes that I'm wearing are not hot right now. But guess what? They're one of my favorite shoes, and that's all I care about. And that's why, like, you know, I would encourage people, don't go buy another freaking, you know, Eagle Rare bottle, right? Like, don't hoard the Eagle Rare bottles. Is it a great value 10-year bourbon? Absolutely. I'm not talking bad about it. But guess what? So is Henry McKenna, right? Like, there's all these other 10-year bourbons out there. Pursue United, right in that wheelhouse. Like, dude, expand your horizons.
Well, I appreciate the plug there. One more question before we kind of wrap things up. So there was one company called Blue Run that tried to, quote unquote, sneakerize the bourbon industry.
That's right.
Kind of give your thoughts on that. Like, I don't know if they really did it because it kind of like hit consumer fatigue a little bit, but they tried to make things very small, a lot of drops, very limited, and very high price. Do you think that's a model that can be replicated and works, or do you think like that's just not going to work in whiskey?
I think it's interesting because, you know, full disclosure, like I love Trey, right? Like from Blue Run. Like I think he does a great job. But they do have a Nike guy on board, and you know they created a very pretty package, and you know there's some history and some cachet there, and you know who's selecting the whiskey and how they put it together. And at the end of the day, like I know we can poo-poo things and talk about price, and I know like in the chat, Fred, like you and I have argued about price. Like, should you consider price? Should you not consider price? I think at the end of the day, the consumer will tell the future of the company. Right. So like you can only pull the wool over somebody's eyes for so long. And I'm not saying that Blue Run is right. So far, they seem to have a very passionate consumer base. The limited drops seem to be working. It doesn't like I haven't had like a really skunky one. Right. Like I haven't had a bad Blue Run yet. So it's interesting, you know, but could another company pull it off? I don't know if there's room for like two or three, but I'd argue like, isn't that what the Nulus of the world are and the NBCs of the world doing where like everything. And this is where I got in trouble and I said that the single barrel is dead. The single barrel coming from a heritage distillery picked by Fred Minnick or picked by Pursuit Spirits, picked by David Jennings. Holy shit, I'm in. One of you guys picking it from a heritage distillery, cool. But you start your whole company on single barrels? That's a tough for sustained success. And like we've seen it over the years. Like, oh man, I'm gonna get in trouble now because I'm naming names, right? But like, you know, like there's NDP people who like, okay, you know, we were selling MGP juice to keep the lights on. Okay, cool. Have you followed it up with what? All of a sudden you don't hear about those people anymore, right? Like, when's the last time you heard about Blom Brothers?
Right.
So at the end, I think the consumer will tell the story. You know, there's...
Well, and as you're talking about with Blue Run and you were comparing them to Nike, but Nike has those affordable, you know, everyday offerings that mass consumers can do. And in whiskey, I think you have to have that portfolio of all those.
Yeah.
Where you just can't make a company focused on that exclusively.
And did they get acquired by Stoli?
Who? Blue Run?
No,
Coors. Yeah. You know, so is that part of like a bigger strategy? Are they going to add like a more mid-level and Blue Run is their high tier brand?
Right? Yeah, I think Coors has got some major moves to make. I think they're going to buy a big distillery.
I have a feeling too. Yeah. Because like you don't make that one move in a vacuum. Like
no, and they don't have a production engine, you know, and they're a production engine house. And they've made so much money with the Bud Light. What do you call them? The
Fiasco. We'll say Fiasco.
Fiasco. Yeah.
And this is another reason maybe my stance has softened on Blue Run a little bit because I've softened on price because at the end of the day, should I save $20 and support Suntory's shareholders, or should I spend the extra 10, 15 bucks and support a small business owner or support like some regional distillery that's employing a bunch of people in town, right? Like that was the thing. Like I do like, cause at Malt, we're allowed to score one point higher or lower based on the price, right? So if you're super value, we go up one. If we think you're a ripoff, we go down one. We don't do half points. Still bone of contention between me and Taylor, pun intended. So I was like, okay, so I have to take price into the review. I like talking about the price, but then anytime my friends would text me and be like, oh, Costco has rare breed for $45.99. Is that a good deal or a ripoff? I'm like, dude, you're texting me over $3. Like you could go to Benny's and get it for $48.99 or whatever it is, right? Like, I'm like, does the $3 matter that more to you? Or is it like the principle of I'm getting ripped off kind of thing? at the end of the day, like, man, I waste $10-$20 on stupid socks. So, you know, who am I to say what's worth it and what's not?
Yeah.
Well, this has been an awesome conversation. I loved it. I think we really went into a deep end of getting into collecting, and you've got a wealth of knowledge when it comes to not only just whiskey, but of course shoes. And it's been so much fun to kind of just pick your brain and understand the mentality and the thought process and the correlations between these two hobbies. I don't know if it gives me like a better outlook or worse outlook of the whiskey industry if he thinks that the shoes are 20 years ahead of time. And so
Kenny's scrolling on eBay right now looking for shoes. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I think I love the point that he made. He said, like, you know, there's a lot of lessons that you can learn from the sneaker world that will eventually happen inside of whiskey. So I'd love to be able to pick his, you know, brain. We'll see what happens. Like, you know, he'll be able to turn that magic eight ball over a lot sooner than we are to kind of see peak in the future.
So we just need to make everyday affordable shoes.
Yeah.
Everyday affordable
bourbon. But I think the good news for you guys is, you know, Nike is taking on the Hoka and the Ons in basketball too. Like, there's all these Chinese brands, Li Ning, Anta, Way of Wade has just like really bitten into their market share. And I think there is a willingness by the consumers, especially in the sneaker market, to buy stuff outside of Nike, but that's, you know, not the same old retro. So, and hopefully I think whiskey will eventually get there where everybody fills their shelves with all the Heaven Hill and all the Buffalo Trace stuff, that eventually they'll be like, oh, there is all these other really awesome small. That's why I said 2023, I think Kraft finally nailed it. Like, now go check out the Still Austins, go check out the Holidays, go check out the Pursuit Uniteds. Cause right now, $40-$50, there's a lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah, totally. Really. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the show. Go ahead and give a plug where people can follow you, learn more about you, get in contact with you, anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for having me, guys. If you guys want to follow me for more sneaker content, you could follow my podcast at The Swoosh Life Podcast. I've been hosting.
Say that again. What is it?
The Swoosh Life Podcast.
Swoosh. Spell that.
S-W-O-O-S-H, The Swoosh Life Podcast, like the Nike.
Like the Nike Swoosh.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, they still haven't come after us for the copyright.
He only knows troops.
Yeah. But they do send us some cool stuff every once in a while. So thank you to the contacts at Nike who support that podcast. It's very, very niche, but it's also golf focused too. So, you know, obviously another hobby that blew up during the pandemic. If you want to hear read my whiskey reviews, you can read my whiskey reviews, my longer form reviews at maltreview.com. And if you want my short form social media nuisance content, follow me at Matt Cusick on TikTok, which is non-existent really, Instagram and Twitter.
There you go. And then you can always catch them on the comments at every round table
as
well.
That's right. And if you need a Weber grill, reach out.
There you go. That too. We got that too. Well, Matt, like I said, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was fantastic. This has been really eye-opening. Actually, I think this went better than I ever anticipated
this
or imagined.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I was just listening the entire time. Love it.
That's been the key to my success is low expectations. So I appreciate that.
No, but it was great. Like I said, it was a good, nice break from the typical conversations we do have here and kind of venture into another world. But make sure you follow Matt. Go check out his podcast over The Swoosh Life. And also, if you like the show, leave a review, rate it, share it with a friend, whatever it is. Let's help make it grow. But with that, cheers, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Toodles.
Go Pokes.